And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pop. My co-host, Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Tired, man. Trying to keep up
you're
on
closing
all
out. I hear you're closing. Are you? I thought you were closing up all the porn you were watching. Make sure it did not auto-play or something.
Oh, that too. That's definitely happening.
Okay. Our erotic, erotic cinema, whatever you like to call it.
Sure. I'm extremely classy.
Did anything happen this week or this weekend? Was there any like big stories or anything?
Slow weekend. Let's talk about the FCS. Kennesaw State.
Let's jump to Kennesaw State's regional partner, and that of course would be the great university known as Tennessee. Dan, and guide us through what happened with Tennessee this weekend, starting on Sunday.
So okay. I guess you got to start with what happened with Florida, because that did have a direct impact. Tennessee from the
what game, also happened Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, Tennessee was all in on Dan Mullen. That was who they wanted as their next coach. That's who they were preparing to break. You know that's who they wanted. What happened is that he got the Florida job because Florida ended up on their third option.
Scott Frost said no.
Chip Kelly said no, took the UCLA job. Scott Frost told them he wasn't going to interview with them, so that pretty much seals it up that Scott Frost is going to Nebraska because he didn't.
Art is going to stay and build UCF into the greatest football powerhouse ever.
He's going to Nebraska. he's definitely going to Nebraska. So he may, you know, that comes, you know, they get told no by Chip Kelly, they get told no by Scott Frost. Then they move to Dan Mullen. So they get Dan Mullen, and now Tennessee's number one guy is off the board. So Tennessee then decides...
I thought John Gruden was the number one guy.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. So then they then decide to go... once they didn't get their number one guy, athletic director John Curry went for his number two choice, which was Greg Schiano. They moved extremely quickly on Greg Schiano. They had Dan Mullen made his decision, I think at like 9 in the morning. That thing was pretty much a done deal. By 11, John Curry was signing a memo of understanding with Greg Schiano. And that's when Dan Wolkin of USA Today. Mm-hmm. And he published in USA Today that on Twitter also that, it looks like, you know, Dan, that the next coach is going to be Greg Schiano. At that point, all hell broke loose. Everything.
Yeah, Dan, I want to talk about this real quick. Because, like, if you're listening to this, you know what the national media narrative has been. It's been Tennessee fans on Twitter, yada, yada. It wasn't fans on Twitter that made this change. It wasn't just fans, you know. It was politicians. It was boosters publicly hating this hire, Dan. So tell us about that. Like, who are the big key players on why Schiano isn't the head coach of Tennessee right now?
The biggest reason is that basically everybody who donates serious money to Tennessee said, "No, you're not." Like immediately, there wasn't a point where like people took a breath and went, "Hey, wait, what? Oh, no." It was an immediate, visceral. No, you're not doing that. There was just no way that was going to happen because of the reaction. I think some of the more stunning moments were when local businesses in Knoxville started tweeting that they weren't going to allow him into their building. Like they weren't going to allow him into the
And the Rock in Tennessee, one of the more famous landmarks in Knoxville, said what? Schiano covers up child rape. So it's just right there, bold letters that you can put in your newspaper the rest of your life, right there.
Yeah, I mean, that was then.
Whether he did or not, doesn't matter.
That was immediately.
That's the perception. And
that was immediately on the cover of every story about this. And to dig in on that, where that comes from, former Penn State assistant McQuarrie was one of the whistleblowers on the Sandusky thing. He was one of the only coaches who testified against Sandusky in his trial. In a deposition when I can't remember if Penn State sued their insurance company or if the insurance company sued Penn State, but one of them sued the other.
I think it was, it's like both, because I think the insurance company may have sued to not pay, and then Penn State sued.
Yeah, the insurance company didn't like want to pay, didn't want to cover what Penn State was going to be owing in civil trials, because they're like, well, you did fraud, and you knowingly covered this up, so we don't have to pay it. So basically, in the course of that, Query took a deposition and said he had been told by Tom Bradley that Tom Bradley, who is former defensive coordinator for Penn State and was a linebackers coach when Sandusky was there, that Tom Bradley had seen Greg Schiano come into the office white as a sheet, saying he saw something with Sandusky and a boy. Now, that is what we call double hearsay, because Tom Bradley didn't see it. He's passing along what Schiano reportedly told him, and McQuery didn't even hear Schiano say that. He is passing along what somebody else told him they heard. So that is not really admissible in court. The prosecutor decided not to really follow up on that because Tom Bradley denied saying it, and there was really nowhere else to go after Tom Bradley denied saying that. And there was nothing really made of it. Now, the national media has seized on the fact that it was double hearsay and that the prosecutor never followed up on it as some kind of like proof that Schiano is a wonderful human being whose reputation has been unfairly destroyed by these coarse vulgarians from East Tennessee.
Yeah.
That is the most insane way I can possibly imagine reading this situation. And a lot of it is, we'll get into why the national media is misreading this so insanely.
It's called, you know, I can say now, Dan, it's called classism. We can have a discussion about that later. But it's because you've got a bunch of rich white Yankees, and they look down on the working class people, the good fans of Tennessee, the good salt of the earth, the good people in Knoxville, Dan. That's why.
Because
you get a bunch of Northwestern grads that are going to thumb their nose because they're mad that their teams were never good at football.
Well, I want
to
bring
that's what it reads like to me. It reads like a bunch of nerds mad at people who are poorer than them.
I want to bring up one person in particular, and that's Dan Wolken, who's based out of Memphis. He writes for USA Today. I bring him up because I'm a fan of him, and that's why this has been so goddamn weird, is that I've always been a fan of his writing. His misery index every week that he writes is one of the best and most fun columns to read about college football. He made an abject fool of himself this weekend. Dan Wetzel, who covered the Sandusky trial pretty extensively, made a fool of himself. Wetzel linked on his Twitter to an article written by a Paterno truther who got himself elected to the Penn State Board of Trustees. Like, Peter King posted an article from John Ziegler, who's a notorious, like, doesn't even believe Sandusky raped children. Like, he's a Sandusky truther. Yeah. Like, the links that the national media was going to try to protect Schiano's reputation led them to completely and totally embarrass themselves in ways I did not think, like, anybody would be this
ridiculous.
Well,
no, you know what it kind of reminded me of, Dan? It reminded me of our current kind of political environment where I don't even want to talk about what the president did today, but you'll see things where he'll link to a weird website or something like that. And it's so weird because, like, these media reporters usually make fun of linking to Breitbart or something weird like that. But they essentially did the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say? Maybe Breitbart might be too good. I don't know, but you know?
What Peter King did was no weirder than our current president linking to some, like, insane British fascist group. Like, it's literally the exact same thing. Like, John Ziegler is a deplorable piece of shit. Like, he is as garbage a human being as it could possibly be. He is on the same level.
You know what I noticed?
Yeah, he's on the same level of people who try to claim that, like, Sandy Hook parents are making up that they had kids because none of those kids really existed. Like, that's how much of an insane piece of shit he is.
I noticed a lot of people from Pennsylvania Twitter especially calling those guys out on Twitter. I don't know, I can never pronounce his name, but, you know, Jimmy Delforio. Pretty popular Twitter personality, really good with images and stuff, especially when after Dan Wolken and some stuff. So it was nice to see the people of Pennsylvania kind of know what was up a little bit better than the journalist who supposedly covered the whole situation.
And the most baffling thing to me about the defenses of Schiano's character is, one, everybody was just pretending that his whole run at Tampa Bay didn't happen. Because, like, when he was at Tampa Bay...
Well, mind you, Dan, and that's what I want to get into. Yeah, let's get into that in a second. So let's... Bad thing in Tampa, we're already back to it. But jump to your next point about Schiano, because I want to jump back.
We're not even going to get into he wasn't a very good coach at Tampa. Because, hey, Steve Spurrier failed in the NFL. Chip Kelly failed in the NFL.
It is what it is.
Yeah, Pete Carroll failed in the NFL
even
the
Saban.
First time.
Yeah.
Nick Saban failed in the NFL. Bobby Petrino failed in the NFL. Like, a lot of really successful, Lou Holtz, a lot of really successful college coaches have bombed in the NFL.
Lou Holtz was in the NFL?
For one season. He tried to run the wishbone with the New York Jets. Yeah.
That's right.
And he quit before the season was over to go take the Arkansas job. Arkansas has done that twice,
that's right.
By the way.
Yeah.
But, like a lot of great college coaches couldn't hack it in the NFL. That's fine. What he did at Tampa Bay revealed a major issue with his character. Like,
yeah.
We're talking about a guy.
Here's my issue there, Dan. Yeah.
We're talking about a guy who leaked leaked his quarterback's medical records to the media, which is that is as fucked up and illegal a thing you can do as possible. Like, that is a violation.
And a guy
of
who was notoriously
everything.
Yeah. And Dan, a guy who had union grievances filed against him. Say what you want about unions or whatever. Rarely do you see that happen in the NFL or any really. Organized labor in sports, we have a grievance filed against a coach. So
yeah.
My argument against Schiano in Tennessee there is, if he's doing that to guys who are paid, what do you think he's going to do to guys who he has complete 100% control over?
And it also brings up, you know, his only real run of success he's ever had as a coach is at Rutgers.
And mind you, Dan, and I want to make this point really quick, mind you, after we had Butch Jones, a guy who was covering up concussions and things of that like, so we know he wasn't going to change the culture in Tennessee.
No.
I think that's a fair.
And we're talking about somebody whose only real success in football coaching came at a place where there is literally nobody covering the team. Rutgers has about 3 beat writers. All right, they are a complete non-entity. You have no scrutiny on what you're doing day
to day. And even Dan, if a story broke about Rutgers because it's in New York, it's buried.
Completely
there's no
buried.
Hope for even a story getting out.
Completely, there's just. He has his best run of success. He had zero scrutiny on anything he was doing. The first time he had a job where he had real scrutiny, he was exposed as a person with very little moral character. So
I mean, Dan, MRSA, was it MRSA?
Yeah,
or Elephantigo broke out.
Yeah, he had a MRSA outbreak in his locker room because, again, like the treatment of his players and the conditions he was making them work in, like caused a MRSA outbreak. So this is a guy who has not earned a benefit of the doubt. And on a more basic level, this is a thing that the national media, the college football media, the coaches in this country, and the athletic directors all need to get through their heads because they're living in a goddamn bubble. Normal people do not want any association with Joe Paterno. I do not give a shit, coaches, that you still respect Joe Paterno as a guy who didn't break NCAA violations and had success. I do not give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. Nobody who's normal does. This thing got sunk the moment that people in Tennessee, not the kind of fans who even listen to this show. If you're listening to this show, we're not even talking about you. We're not talking about people who are following every up-to-date thing on Twitter. We're not talking about people who have a subscription to 247 or Rivals.
Casual Tennessee fans.
We're talking about casual
people might schedule fans. Their wedding accidentally on the
We're talking about the kind of person who goes to one game a year, who has a jersey at their home, who does not know who assistant coaches are. That's the other thing people need to keep in mind.
We're talking about the type of person who schedules their wedding to be on a Saturday in the fall. And doesn't even think about
them. We're not even talking about people like that. Just like your average college football fan.
That
like,
is your average.
Does not even know, like, the average college football fan doesn't know the name of the quarterback's coach. He doesn't know the name of the defensive and offensive coaches. He knows who the head coach is. That's it. So they don't even know who Schiano is. They don't know that Schiano is a guy coaching for Urban Meyer right now. They don't know that Schiano coached at Rutgers until you told them that he coached at Rutgers. And all they have to hear is, he was on the same staff as Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky. And they go, nope, Nope, he's not coaching my team. I'm not spending a dollar on a team coached by that. And it's like the media has their head so far up their ass trying to defend coaches because this incestuous relationship between coaches, the coaches' agents, the athletic directors, and the media, they're so in each other's shit all the time that they have never had an actual conversation with a normal person who watches sports. And normal people who watch sports do not want anything to do with anything that happened under Joe Paterno. That guy, with normal people, not football coaches, with normal people, Joe Paterno is on about the same level as Hitler. And until people in the coaching world figure that out, we're going to see stupid shit like this again. But nobody wants anything to do with that guy. If you bought Joe Paterno a meal and there's a picture of it, you're not getting a coaching job without people raising a fit.
Well, Dan, here's the biggest thing I realized I didn't know. I thought the more people in the media would kind of get. It doesn't matter what the truth is. It matters what the kind of point you're making. It matters what the perception is. Perception is reality. No one really cares about what the truth and what the fine details say. The perception is Schiano helped cover up child rape. He did. That's what everyone believes is true, you know? I don't know how else to better put that.
And it also comes down to normal people don't want to try to sit and parse that shit out. They're like, oh, is that in question? Well, then no. Is that if that comes up that, well,
no, they especially don't want to figure that shit out for their college, like for something as dumb and as arcane. You know, I know we do a podcast, but something as dumb as college football. They don't even like to do it for their politicians, the people in charge of them. They especially don't want to do it for things that are supposed to be fun. They're luxuries.
No one
worries about how much the people at the golf course are getting paid.
Yeah. It's also
why they have to all sleep in the same cabin every night.
It's like, especially when he's not the coach yet. Like, if he was already the coach, people are like, well, can we fire him over that? I don't know. Oh, God. But if they don't have to have him yet, they're going to be like, no, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to have to ever think about this. I don't want to have to worry in the back of my head, did my coach keep his mouth shut about child rape?
Like if I'm a Tennessee fan, I don't want my Alabama buddy to go, well, I mean, look what y'all are about, man. Like, you can't talk shit. You can't do nothing when you have a coach with that kind of reputation, Dan. So I get it, and it wasn't, like we said, it wasn't just the fans, it was boosters, it was even politicians, Dan.
I mean, it was like a media.
Including our boy.
Including
our boy, Glenn Jacobs.
Including the man we've endorsed for mayor of Knox County, Mr.
The only libertarian this podcast will ever endorse.
Yeah, the absolute sweetheart, Glenn Jacobs. You know.
The demon Kane.
Like, everybody just immediately went, because here's the thing. Politicians may not be the brightest people in the world. They can feel when there's bullshit. They can smell bullshit. They can smell when shit's about to hit the fan. And they know, I need to get on the right side of this. I need to be on the other side of this issue. They got better instincts for that stuff than apparently sports writers and athletic directors and coaches do. Because, again, these people have become so insulated from, like, real people. And real people's reactions to anything.
Because, Dan, they deal with like people on Twitter all day who are mostly just probably trying to piss them off, trolling them, which is hilarious in my opinion.
Well,
they tend to think that's how everyone is. Yeah,
it's the Dave Meltzerization of like sports media. Because like before Dave Meltzer got a Twitter, and I know this is funny saying this on this website, but before Dave Meltzer got a Twitter, I feel like the vast majority of people who had heard of Dave Meltzer liked. And maybe the people who knew Dave a little bit better than others maybe didn't have the same opinion. But for the average person who only ever heard Dave Meltzer through his audio on his website and through his newsletter, they probably liked him. And then people saw the way he reacted to people with Twitter, and we've seen more and more people going, this guy's a dick. Like, this guy's a weirdo dick. And, like, I think all these sports writers – who had never in their life had to interact with any of the people who read their columns. Like, the minute they had to actually deal with people, they just, oh, everybody's crazy. Everybody's out to get me. Like, Dan Wolkin starts, like, 20 Twitter fights a day, and then will, like, whoa, I can't believe these people are still tweeting me. You said something inflammatory to them. Of course they're still tweeting you. Like, mute them.
You know, and Dan, I think we, to bring it out of college for a second, we've kind of seen that happen with Zach Harper. Like, his brand was kind of doing that shit all the time on Twitter. And we saw where people didn't follow him when he left a bigger website, you know? It's not the best brand to have, Mr. I'm smarter than all my fans kind of brand, you know?
Yeah. It's fine when you're still with USA Today or with CBS. The moment you're on some website nobody's ever heard of before.
We saw it with Simmons.
Yeah.
We saw it with Bill Simmons, who loved to do, these are my fans, and, like, make fun of his people. And look, no one follows you because you make fun of us all the time, Bill. And no one's going to fucking wherever you're at. The Ringer. Can't even remember the name.
Yeah. So, I guess, like, moving on, like, moving on from the Penn State side of this, now let's move on to, like, the football side of this. Is Greg Schiano a good coach? And I would say, I don't think so. Because here's where it comes down to Greg Schiano. Like, let's say Greg Schiano, instead of his first job being as graduate assistant for Penn State with Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky, let's say Greg Schiano had started his career coaching with Paul Pasqualoni at Syracuse. Okay? Let's say that was his first job. And let's say he never interacted with Joe Paterno. And his career played out the exact same way after that. Would you think Greg Schiano was a good choice for Tennessee? And the answer would be no.
No.
He's got zero ties to the South. He's never recruited the Southeast, unless you count Miami, and I don't.
Unless you count New Jersey, too, because the Southeast tends to recruit New Jersey.
Sure.
For whatever reason.
And was he a great coach in the Big East? Look, there's a bunch of people trying to butter your ass up telling you that what he did at Rutgers was just earth-changing. It was earth-shattering. Oh, my God. He won 11 games at Rutgers one time. You might want to go check out some of the shit that happened in the Big East during the mid-2000s.
Dan, you know who else famously won a lot of games once? Didn't Kansas have a season where they won 11 games once?
At least that was in the Big
12. Sometimes it just happens.
That did happen.
Yeah.
But, like,
I'm just saying, though, Dan, sometimes weird stuff, sometimes anomalies happen when you look at the statistics, Dan. That's probably what Schiano was.
Here's the thing that we all have to, like, look at the track record of coaches who came out of the Big East post Miami and Virginia Tech leaving for the ACC. So what happens is Miami leaves the Big East. There's no longer a dominant recruiting power in the Big East. There's no longer that school that gets five-star talent that you've got to beat. So what starts happening?
Yeah, our Dan, that school where you can invite your recruits to the big game versus you upset them, you got them hooked for life.
So
is that fair to say?
Yeah, but what happens in the Big East is they replace three legit programs, Boston College, Virginia Tech, and Miami, with three mid-majors, which Louisville, Cincinnati, and South Florida. South Florida had had a football team for, like, less than 10 years at the point they joined the Big East. You know, Louisville and Cincinnati were basketball schools that had never had any kind of success in football consistently. So what you
They were brought in to be more basketball.
Towards UConn. Cincinnati and Louisville were brought in to make basketball better. That's it.
Yeah.
So, you know, what happens in that league? You had this situation where suddenly the Big East was really a mid-major conference as far as quality of the programs in your league. But you still had the ability where your champion would play in a BCS bowl every year. So you had the ability to play against subpar competition compared to other leagues, but you had the ability to go to recruits and dangle in front of them, you'll get to play in a BCS bowl if you win. So you were able to get better players than Conference USA schools could, or MAC schools could, or Mountain West schools could, without having to play the Alabamas of the world, or the Ohio States of the world, or the Florida States.
And Dan, I just want to say this too. Where's Rutgers in New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Schiano's what, an Italian name?
Yes.
Little mafia business involved Rutgers
probably,
during that span?
Probably.
I'm not saying no.
So,
I'm not saying, like, maybe, you know, a couple guys got hired down in the dump. You know what I mean?
I just want to draw people's attention to some of the teams that won big in the Big East in the 2000s. West Virginia came one game away from the national title. Rich Rod left West Virginia and went to Michigan. How did that turn out? 3 years later, he's fired. You know, Butch Jones coaches at Cincinnati, goes to Tennessee. How did that turn out? Randy Edsall wins at a harder job than Rutgers as everybody, I mean, Rutgers has no football history, but UConn has the same no history and is located in a state where there's nothing. There's no football players in New England, and you're number two in New England behind Boston College. So you don't even get the pick of the litter. Randy Edsall won the Big East and went to the Fiesta Bowl. Then he went to the Maryland job. How did that turn out? The only two guys who came out of that Big East who had anything resembling success was Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, which has been up and down. He's had some good years. He's had some terrible years. But overall, I would say it's pretty well a success. And then Bobby Petrino at Louisville. Mm-hmm. Everybody else who's come out of that Big East in the 2000s failed. So you have to ask yourself, is Greg Schiano Bobby Petrino or is he Randy Edsall? Because when I look at Greg Schiano, I see the same thing I saw with Butch Jones, which is a guy whose team is winning pretty good, but who can't win his league because Greg Schiano never won the Big East. He topped out at 11-1 and never won the league and consistently could not beat those other programs in the Big East. Why would I think he could then come into the SEC in one of the harder jobs in the SEC and win it? Yeah.
Well, it's not even a guy, Dan, when you look at, like, maybe his offense or his defense, you go, wow, that's revolutionary. That system, we're going to bring it over, it's going to fix our program. Doesn't even bring that.
Yeah.
Runs, like, a fucking stupid pro style in, what, like, 4-3? Like, or cover 2 or something awful?
He's a quarters guy.
So I don't even get it.
Yeah, he's a quarters guy. He runs cover 4 all the time. And it's like...
Yeah.
So you're also talking about a guy who's not coached in college in, what, 7 years? 8 years?
Yeah. Well... I mean, he was a coordinator.
How well is he doing as a coordinator? How many points?
Not well, Dan.
How many points did Iowa score on Ohio State? Has anybody?
How many did Oklahoma when he faced a good quarterback? I mean, because Baker Mayfield's probably the best quarterback Ohio State played all year, and he kicked their ass.
How many people?
To be fair,
how many people have watched Ohio State the past 2 years and defensively and gone, that's definitely a team that's playing up to their talent level? That is definitely a defense that is playing to their ability as far as their talent.
Well, not even that, Dan. A defense where you watch it and go, wow, that coordinator's making a difference.
Yeah. They're really doing some creative shit over there.
Yeah. It's just basic bullshit. Basic Big Ten bullshit defense is what he's doing. So, yeah, all the points you make, Dan, awful hire. I want to move on, though. I want to talk about Dan Mullen in Florida.
Before we move on, there's one more element to this we got to talk about. And we got to talk about why have the reactions gone the way they've gone.
Because we're almost half an hour in on Schiano.
We're going to keep going. So we're going to keep – this show will go 3 hours. Why has the Schiano stuff – why has the Schiano – we had a short show last week. We can make it up for it this week. Why has the Schiano stuff gotten the reaction that it's gotten? And the answer is both gross and simple. And I also want to talk about why did John Curry make this mistake. But why has the media been covering for this? Because who is Greg Schiano's agent? It's Jimmy Sexton, the most powerful agent in college football. And nobody wants to say that Jimmy Sexton fucked up. Because part of being an agent is making sure that you not just get a good contract for your coach, but that you put him in a spot where he's going to be successful. That's part of what you do as an agent. And Jimmy Sexton got Greg Schiano a job that he would have been fired in 2 years. This hire at Tennessee was every bit exactly the same as Nebraska hiring Mike Riley. Everything about it. Because what happened with Nebraska? Nebraska, when Sean Eichhorst, the AD of Nebraska at the time, when he was trying to replace Bo Pelini, he wanted Brett Bielema. He wanted Bielema up and down. He didn't get Bielema. Bielema decided to stay at Arkansas. Probably regrets that today. Probably wishes he would have taken that Arkansas or that Nebraska job. But that's who Eichhorst wanted. And that would have been a decent hire. If he had hired Bielema, that might have been a good hire. When he didn't get Bielema, he went to a number two choice that he could have gotten if he had done a 3-month search. He could have still gotten Mike Riley. Mike Riley wasn't going nowhere. Mike Riley, the only risk with him is that his old job was going to fire him. Like, that was the biggest worry with Mike Riley, is that, oh, his old job is going to fire him, and then you're going to look like an idiot for hiring him.
So Dan, you're saying
the same thing happened this weekend.
There was no reason for Tennessee to panic because they could have hired Schiano next
you
week. Week
hired
after.
You could have had Schiano walk barefooted from Columbus to Knoxville and gotten him because nobody else wanted the guy. Yeah. That guy, when he came back from the NFL, thought he was going to get a head coaching job somewhere in college, and then it was crickets chirping. Minnesota said no. Oregon laughed him out of the building. Rutgers didn't even want him back when they were firing their coach and hiring a new coach a few years ago in the Big Ten. They said no. So all these people talking about how in demand Schiano is, his own friggin' old job didn't want him back. You could have gotten Schiano any day in the week. But when he didn't get his number one choice, he went to Schiano. Why? Because he knew the guy. And because Jimmy Sexton snowballed him. Because he's a moron. Because John Curry is the same guy who tried to push Bill Snyder out last year and replace him with Jim Leavitt, who, if you don't remember, is the guy who assaulted one of his own players at South Florida in front of a locker room full of people. That's who John Curry is. He is a guy with no standards, with no decency, and worse than all that, no brain cells. He's a guy who pushed Frank Martin out the door in Kansas State so he could hire Bruce fucking Weber. This is not a smart guy. And everybody is trying to do everything they can because John Curry talks to the media a lot, and Jimmy Sexton is one of the most powerful agents. So you have a confluence of two guys who the media likes because they suck everybody's dick, and Sexton gives you lots of scoops, covering for a terrible decision on two parties on both ends of that contract. Both those guys screwed up. Everybody involved screwed up, but the media's got to cover for him because they got to deal with Jimmy Sexton tomorrow, and they like John Curry, even though John Curry couldn't find himself out of a wet paper bag if you handed him a map.
So what? So are you telling me John Curry is going to hire Steve Sarkisian?
John Curry
as the next head coach?
John Curry is going to – who knows what the hell John Curry – all I can tell you, going by John Curry's track record, he's going to try to hire a guy who has major moral problems. So, I don't know. He'll probably hire Jackie Sherrill.
Art Briles.
Kendall Briles. Like, he'll just do whatever the stupidest thing is. And I think that does it for him.
I think the Sandusky Briles dream team. I don't even want to talk about Tennessee goes from here because I'm going to sit back. I'll eat my popcorn. I'm going to watch and see what they do. I don't want to speculate. I don't care.
The latest word is that they're going to steal my coach at NC State, Dave Doran.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I want to move on and talk about our boy, Dan Mullen. Round of applause. He finally did it. He didn't fart during the interview. He didn't hit the 80s wife with a car on the way to contract signing. He didn't do anything incredibly dumb, and he gets the best coaching job of his life. He's home, head coach at the University of Florida. What does this mean for Florida? Because I think this means Florida's going to be back. I'm calling it now. Maybe next year even. Because this guy is a competent coach. You saw what he did. When you win at Mississippi State, Dan, when you get to be number one, doesn't matter when you were at Mississippi State, you're probably a damn good head coach. That's how I feel about Dan Mullen. He might be the best coach in the East now. Not that that's saying much, but still.
Well, he might have still farted in the interview. He just was actually interviewing with somebody who already like knew him day to day and was like, well, he is sitting here with his testicles hanging out of his pants, but... Like, I have seen him close before. I think it says a lot about how good a job Florida is. That Florida was on their third choice, and their third choice was better than most schools' first target.
I think, Dan, too, when we say it's their third choice, I mean, I think Scott Frost clearly is going to – that's his dream job. I think if he didn't go to Nebraska, probably would have taken that Florida job.
Yeah.
Chip Kelly – probably too many black people in Florida. Let's face it. Chip Kelly's a racist. And he's probably going to get in a lot of trouble at UCLA. I'm going to say it now. He's probably going to say something dumb at UCLA. I guarantee
you. No, Chip Kelly doesn't say anything, so that won't happen.
He did in Philadelphia.
Well, he didn't say anything out loud to the media dumb.
To the player. You know.
He better not fuck with any of P. Diddy's sons. Because the last UCLA coach who fucked with one of P. Diddy's sons got a fucking dumbbell thrown at his head. So
dumbbell head, yes.
Yeah.
What is the Dan Mullen art? What's that going to mean? Do you agree with me? You think Florida could be in the hunt for an SEC title?
I mean,
as soon as next year.
He was as much of a sure thing as there was on the coaching market this year, because Dan Mullen. He may not win you a national championship, but he's going to make you like a 9-10 win team. Like, you're at least going to get to like where Mark Richt used to have Georgia. where it's like you're never going to be embarrassed. Florida is never going to be embarrassed again. You know, well, the one thing when you look at a coach who's done miracle worker stuff with a small program is you always wonder, can they handle having the best players? But he was there before as a coordinator, so he shouldn't be so flummoxed by it.
Florida's gonna
be good. I mean, I don't see how they don't end up being really good.
No, especially if
unless they force him to keep Randy Shannon as his defensive coordinator, that might screw him. Like he might be screwed if he has to keep Randy Shannon, because Randy Shannon, you know, Randy Shannon could get lost in a maze that has one open wall in it.
So I want to move on. I want to talk Mississippi State. They had to replace Stan Mullen. I think they made a great hire. They actually hired the right guy from who used to coach at Penn State. Were you kind of shocked to see Mississippi State make two good coaching hires in a row? Has this ever happened in the program's history?
No.
A modern program, not what they did in the 20s.
Yeah. they've never had two good coaches in a row. At least in modern football history. I'm not shocked.
I thought this was a really smart hire.
I'm
really impressed by what State did.
Yeah, I'm not shocked Joe Moorhead got a good job, because he absolutely has deserved it. He's been one of the most consistently excellent offensive coordinators in college football for a long time. I'm kind of surprised he's going to Mississippi State, but you know, here's the thing about Mississippi State. Like, even if you go and get like an ace SEC recruiting coach, like, even if you got a guy who's been he's got all these years of experience getting top talent in SEC jobs, he ain't going to get top talent at Mississippi State, because Mississippi State never gets top talent. So if you're Mississippi State, you're better off recruiting or getting a coach in there who maybe doesn't have great recruiting abilities, but who knows how to coach up guys who maybe have different levels of talent. And that's Joe Moorhead.
No, and I think, you know, if I look at Mississippi State, I think the game plan, especially going forward, is to get you some JUCOs. You know, the quickest way to build up a program really quick, Dan, is to grab some JUCOs, coach them up, win something, and see what happens.
And here's the other thing about Mississippi State.
It worked pretty well at Auburn.
Mississippi State has to, like, most of the time, the areas that Mississippi State's trying to recruit have been picked over by programs that are better than them. It ain't the worst idea in the world for them to have a guy with ties to a completely different area of the country that no other SEC team is going to be recruiting, who can, like, pick off a guy or two from up in the Northeast and bring them down south. Because they're a program that's not going to be able to get the top players in Mississippi, Alabama, or Georgia. They're just not.
Yeah. Especially, Dan, though, when Ole Miss is in some trouble, LSU doesn't look so hot. It's not the worst time to maybe bring in a guy who's not a Mississippi boy, that makes sense. Because you've never had a weaker SEC West to contend with. I mean, even A&M's about to hire a new coach. And I don't think a lot of people want to go there.
Other than Jimbo Fisher?
Yes. And that'll be the next thing we talk about. Sumlin out at A&M. Looks like Jimbo's in. I don't think this is going to work, though.
Jimbo looks like a guy who's like on the downside of his college career. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks like a guy who just doesn't have the energy and the drive to do what he used to do. And I think that's part of why Florida State people aren't exactly crying at the idea of leaving. Like, the Florida State fans I've seen are kind of like, yeah, go ahead and leave. That means we don't have to pay your buyout. Because they're kind of just getting sick of him in general, and there's been a lack of energy around that program and a lack of, hey, we got to go out there and get it, you know. I don't know how that's going to turn out.
And I think he's walking into a way worse situation, especially with fans and expectations. A&M fans are way worse than FSU fans when it comes to thinking they should win the national championship.
I'm not sure about that. FSU fans are pretty hardcore.
I am. Well, FSU fans at least have won a national championship. A&M fans have never won anything, and they think they're in the game every year. Because they're nuts. Because they go to that fish camp and get brainwashed. It's a weird program to be around. I don't think Jimbo's going to last long either. I think Jimbo will be gone in 3 years. That's my hot take. If he goes to A&M, book it down, write it up, send it to Ad Cold Takes. Jimbo Fisher will not last 3 years at A&M.
I think he'll last longer than that because I think they're going to give him. I think they're going to give him such a contract that I think they're not going to want to move away from.
They just got rid of Sumlin. How bad has Sumlin been? Really? For what A&M is, he's been the great coach at A&M. And if it's it was a you know a couple of games going his way for maybe being in a national championship a few years, you know, I just don't like the. I don't like getting rid of him this early. Still, it's not like you really bottomed out.
Yeah, but don't you think you knew by now that he wasn't going to make it? Like, he wasn't going to get any better? Because you'd have 5 years, and you kind of knew.
That's what A&M is. That's Dan, they are who we thought they were. That's what A&M football is. It's never going to be. He might have won a national championship in a few years or something if everything went his way. And it almost did. You know, if that Manziel team would have maybe gotten past Auburn, maybe they could have snuck in, and, you know, 2014. So I think you just got to kind of look at the situation and kind of realize what you are here at A&M. That's just not a program that's going to compete for anything ever. Never even won the Big 12. What, you won it once?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Texas A&M is an 8-win program. That's what they are. Like, historically, that's what they are. But if you've got a ton of money, it's really not the craziest thing in the world to keep going, well, we're going to try a different coach. Maybe he's going to get us higher. Well, let's try somebody else.
That ain't never gonna work.
It could. No, if they found a Steve Spurrier, if they found a young Steve Spurrier,
but they're not gonna hire a Steve Spurrier. They're not gonna give a young Steve Spurrier time to do anything because they try to go out and get these stupid flashy ass hires.
Well, Steve Spurrier didn't take no time. Steve Spurrier won the SEC in his first season. Like, if you find,
we also didn't have to go and recruit. I mean.
Hey, Texas
also had an easier path.
Texas is pretty weak right now. I mean, if Texas A&M ever found that, like a Chip Kelly or a Steve Spurrier or that kind of like generational mind of a coach, absolutely they could become a great program. But they're not, and unless they find that kind of coach, they're not going to be that because they never have been.
You know what, Dan? I want to backtrack on that real quick. Is Chip Kelly really the generational mind? Because how many national championships did he win?
Who?
How many? At Oregon. Chip Kelly.
Well, Oregon's a piece of shit program.
Why does Chip Kelly...
Oregon's a piece of shit
Why
program.
Why does Chip Kelly get to be a generational mind?
Because he made Oregon something.
He didn't win anything. Florida was... But no, you just compared him to Steve Spurrier. Where was Florida?
Because Steve Spurrier went to... Because
they were
Florida,
a piece of shit program.
Florida and Texas A&M are and UCLA are like the closest comparisons to each other because they were all programs that had the potential to be something amazing and they never have been. Until Spurrier got to Florida. And then Florida has won, like, 4 national championships in 20 years.
Yeah.
So, like, Florida, because they're in the state of Florida, and they have all these great players in their backyard, it was always a potential. Oregon is in the middle of nowhere. Oregon has no players.
Well, okay, but Dan, they also had Nike money. Let's not pretend like they didn't have one of the biggest...
They have Nike money. A lot of places have money. Like, a lot of places have money.
But the founder of Nike went to their school, Dan. They have one of the richest boosters of any school
in
the nation.
Michigan has more money than Oregon. I don't care how much Nike money they got. Michigan has twice
that
amount
of money.
Remember
those Oregon locker rooms, Dan?
Michigan has twice that much. Michigan has twice the amount of money that Oregon does.
Oregon had...
What Oregon did...
First schools
what
have
Nike,
some of the
what Nike did is put Oregon on the same money plane as places like Michigan. They didn't make them better than Michigan money-wise. They just made them equal. But they still don't have the players.
I think Chip Kelly's an overrated coach.
He's not, because where did Oregon do before him?
And really, all he did, Dan, was rip off my boy Gus Malzahn's offense. So
Chip Kelly was actually doing it before Gus, so...
Was he doing it in high school?
He was doing it at the University of New Hampshire.
Pretty sure Gus was doing that...
Well, Gus for a long time was a two back power coach, and then he saw what colleges were doing.
Well,
with
he still
offense.
Is technically.
Like I'm sorry, understand? Like Gus Malzahn.
I'm gonna create the narrative.
An I form guy.
No, I'm creating the narrative that Gus Malzahn invented the spread. He invented motion in the backfield. That was.
I mean, he really didn't.
It doesn't matter. Perception, Dan. Did Shiano really see Sandusky fuck a little boy? I don't know, but if people believe it, it's true. That's how the Christian church works. Let's move on. Any other coaching hire you want to talk about? I don't
We can talk about Chip Kelly. I don't think it's going to mean anything.
Oh, he's going to. He's going to dominate the Pac-12. He's about.
Who cares?
He's about. He's about
dominating the Pac-12.
He's about to dominate that
by the Big Ten or SEC.
Well, he's actually got, well. A, the SEC is not as good as it was. Like, the teams that beat Chip Kelly are not as good as they were when they were beating Chip Kelly in conference.
Well, but they still have the same size defensive linemen, and I think Jay and the SEC is about to rebound hard.
It's not. It's not.
It is.
It's not.
It is.
It isn't.
How can you say it's not? How?
Well, Florida's going to rebound.
Florida just got better.
The rest of them ain't.
Florida, Mississippi State's going to stay pretty good.
But Auburn Mississippi State is an 8-win team max. So they're going to maybe continue
still
being
better.
Okay, but they're not good. like Mississippi State, even with Joe Morgan, is still the kind of team that loses to UCLA by 4 touchdowns.
I just don't know.
And Alabama's on their way down because Nick Saban doesn't have many more years of this. And if this year's Alabama team had played those Marcus Mariota, Chip Kelly, Oregon teams, they lose by 4 touchdowns.
Well, Dan, I know a team that did play that. Who looks on the rise. And that's going to shift to our next topic. I want to talk about Auburn, Alabama, and the Iron Bowl. Does it look like maybe things are starting to click with Gus at Auburn, where maybe we can start talking about Gus Malzahn as one of the better coaches in college now? Definitely one of the most fun to watch.
The guy you wanted
but
fired?
Slowly.
The guy you wanted fired this year?
Yeah. You know what, Dan? I was wrong. How about that? But can we start saying after these two wins, is Gus starting to get into maybe top 15 best coaches in college now?
Top
10?
I think so. I mean, I think he's always kind of been near there, especially as an offensive coach. He's getting
you. Well, I think, you know, when I look back on the past couple of years with Gus, he just kind of swung and missed on quarterbacks, and that's really his fault necessarily. Sometimes things just don't work. When you're Auburn, you know, you don't get 2 5-star quarterback recruits. You know, you get 1 for 4 years. But it seems when Gus has his quarterback, Auburn's just playing for SEC or national titles, so I feel really dumb for being mean to Gus Malzahn earlier, Dan. That's what I'm trying to say. I was 100% wrong.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
What the most striking thing about the Iron Bowl was that there was no point in that game where Alabama looked like the better team. Never.
Until you almost jinxed us. We almost.
Even then, it looked like fluky shit. Like when, you know, Alabama almost scored a touchdown on a tipped pass that a tight end almost caught, but they dropped it. Like,
off the ground. And then their first touchdown, I think, was on like a Hail Mary, basically. Who's number 4? With Collins, the 10th year senior.
Yeah.
A lot of their scores felt fluky. That offense just, I really thought that run game was going to pick up at some point. It never did, Dan, in that game. I was really impressed with Auburn's defense.
I mean, to be fair, that's how Alabama's looked all season. If it's not Jalen Hurts running the ball, they haven't really been able to run the football.
Yeah.
You know.
And then we saw at the end with the bad snap, just weird game. Like, do you still under know what was going on in that fourth quarter field goal? Do you think that was a fake, or was that just a bad snap for Alabama? I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
It looked like the kicker got Charlie Browned.
Well, yeah, the holder dropped the ball. And then they just had to,
I just said, screw it.
And then they just had to, like, do a bunch of fumble fuckery to try to save something. It did not work.
Yeah. I want to jump and talk about this game, though, because I was half right, Dan. I want to talk about the game, TM, talking about Michigan, Ohio State. I did pick Michigan to beat the spread last week, so once again, Dan, I called the game right when it comes to the spread.
Did you? I think Ohio State covered.
No, they didn't.
With that last second touchdown, they
11,
didn't cover?
I think.
I thought the spread was 10.5.
I think it was like Ohio State by a lot. I'm pretty sure I was right on that.
I'm pretty sure it was 10.5. I'm pretty sure that last second touchdown, that meaningless extra touchdown Ohio State scored, I'm pretty sure it fucked you.
But here's where I was especially right, Dan. A guy we didn't think was going to step up stepped up big. And that was the quarterback for Ohio State, the redshirt freshman who came in when JT Barrett went down.
Yeah, they were better with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, JT Barrett's inability to throw the football really was glaring. It was what we've seen good defense.
How much do you think being loyal to JT Barrett maybe has hampered Ohio State
these
past 2 years?
Yeah, I would say it definitely has. The issue with JT Barrett is he's a good but not great runner. He's not explosive. He's a guy who can consistently get like five, six yards a pop, you know, but he's never going to break big runs, and he's just not that good a passer. So what defenses do is when they're game planning to do the run, they basically just say, yeah, we'll let JT Barrett carry it 20 times. Because that's what – when you're a team that runs option plays, you know, zone read, inverted veer, you know, whatever option plays you want to talk about, the defense can dictate who carries the ball because the defense can go, all right, we're gonna key on the running back and make the quarterback run with the football. And if JT Barrett gets a lot of carries, his passing gets worse because he starts throwing less. I mean, he's a guy where the more times he runs the ball, he gets less accurate, and he's just not a threat to break big runs. And Michigan said, yeah, JT, you beat us. And he wasn't beating them. And then they brought in a different running – they brought in a different quarterback when JT Barrett went out with his meniscus. They brought in a different quarterback. Their run game stopped running as much option and started just running like inside zone and outside zone and power from the shotgun, so with no read to it. So their running back started carrying the ball more often. And then their quarterback just started throwing dimes because they had a quarterback back there who could throw, and it worked.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was kind of the story of that game. Also, the story is Michigan fans are not very happy with Jim Harbaugh.
No, they're not.
I don't think it's just losing to
Ohio
State.
It's just bullshit. They're not. It's not true. Like,
you gotta win rivalry games.
It's but Michigan fans are not. They're not. Like our message.
That's not what I saw.
Is there some like message board fans who are starting to get mad? Yeah.
Like Go Blue 42069.
Yeah, like Go Blue 42069's mad. Michigan fans aren't because they know this was. Because here was the thing. If Michigan had anybody who could play quarterback, they win that game by 2 touchdowns. They had guys wide open against the genius Greg Schiano's defense. They would have plays where their quarterback dropped back to throw, and he had 4 different guys who would have had a touchdown, and then he just froze and got sacked. After the game, John O'Korn broke down crying at the press conference because he's like, "I lost the game," and everybody was like, "Yeah, you did." I mean, there's no point in. You know, there's some people who want to, like, really keep shitting on the guy. But for the most part, Michigan fans are like, yeah, he lost the game, and he realizes it. We don't really need to put – we really don't need to shit any harder on this guy because he knows he did it. Like, he blew it.
Yeah.
He's bad. He's a third-string quarterback, and he's going to graduate, and he's never going to play football again after this. I mean, that's, you know.
Well, he'll probably for some reason, like, get drafted by the Jets in the 3rd round.
Sure. Because
he's tall and white.
Yeah, I mean, John O'Korn just can't.
He'll get drafted before Lamar Jackson for some reason.
Yeah. John O'Korn just can't play. Like, he's a bad football player. His brain is not capable of handling a football game. He's just not.
Yeah.
I
want to move on to the day before. Did you get a chance to watch maybe the best football game of the year?
Central Florida, South Florida?
UCF. Yes.
God, that game was awesome.
That was one of the funnest games I watched. So I watched it. I was actually on the way back to Atlanta on Thanksgiving Day. I watched a lot of it on my phone. Well worth it. Fun experience. One of the best games I've seen all year. I think I watched it again that night. That's how much fun I had watching it. What were your takeaways from that game?
Yeah, I mean, both these guys should be coaching somewhere else next year. I don't know if they will. I haven't heard Charlie Strong being reached out to by Tennessee. They did try to hire him when he was at Louisville before he took the Texas job. So maybe there's some sore feelings about that institutionally. But, yeah. I mean, both these guys should probably be somewhere else because Charlie Strong seems to have figured out the whole what a good offense is supposed to be thing, which is what hurt him at Texas.
Have you seen a coach do as good of a job as Frost did? You see a team that was winless 2 years ago.
Yeah,
not only went undefeated this year, but had one of the most rocking stadiums and atmosphere around. Like, a guy who's transformed a program. Like, if I'm Nebraska, I'm so excited to get Scott Frost because this isn't just a guy who wins games. He's going to turn your whole program into something fun to watch again and, like, really involve everyone around.
And their offense.
I'm really impressed by the job he did.
Their offense is so devastating. That's the – like, it's not just, hey, this is an offense that scores a lot of points, you know. It's not just, hey, this is an offense that, you know, really does a great – like, that offense buries people. Like, it is the Oregon Chip Kelly offense from – you know, if you remember what it was like when Chip Kelly was at Oregon and they would play, like, Oregon State, or they'd play Washington, or they'd play Washington, and they would just, by the second quarter, it's like 31-0. And it's just like, well, they put them away already. Like, that's it for them. Like, that's what it's like watching this Oregon team, or this Central Florida team. They just bury you 6 feet under, and you just never, you're never able to even get off the mat. Like, you never even have a chance
to
get back up.
This is my best argument for an 18 playoff. I'd really like to see what they do against a big team. I think they could upset.
Here's my argument against the 18 playoff. They never put them in, even if it was 18.
That's probably right.
Like, they're like,
well, that's
what,
why
are they,
62 team playoff. Like, I thought they moved up in top 10.
Like, you would have to have, like, a 2014 playoff before they put UCS in there.
All right, then. I want to talk one more game. I don't know how much you saw of it. That's Stanford-Notre Dame. Have you seen a team really fall off that was that high? Like, Notre Dame kind of has?
Yeah, Notre Dame kind of felt like you beat Navy by seven.
Yeah.
It just felt like Notre Dame got exposed as a team that couldn't throw the ball, and all they could do is run. And once teams kind of figured that out, and they just said, yeah, we're just going to do everything we can to take the run away and make you pass. Well, I guess we can't.
So that was a big game for Stanford, because didn't that put Stanford in the Pac-12 championship, right? That
win? So it's going to be Stanford versus USC, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and that's a fun way to transition it, Dan, because that game's going to be on Friday, not on Saturday with everybody else, because the Pac-12 does nothing that makes sense.
Well, that might be a good idea.
Friday, Stanford.
They're going to be all alone, people might actually watch it.
But they actually play two bowl games head-to-head, which might be the dumbest thing possible.
Yeah.
When friend of the show, Wes Destiny,
told me that the Alamo Bowl and the Halladay Bowl were going to be going on at the same time, I just started laughing.
All right, let's talk Stanford at USC. I think that's on Fox or FS1. USC is a favorite by 4. I'm taking Stanford. I don't trust USC at all in any game that matters. I think against them all the time.
Yeah, but they played Stanford this year and beat them by like 40 billion.
It might be a theme going on, Dan. I don't like playing a team twice in one season.
Well, when you beat a team by like 40, I trust you to beat them the second time.
You say that, but this is a USC team that probably has the same attitude as you, Dan, and they'll probably fuck it up somehow. They tend to get a little cocky in games they should win. Yeah. All right. Who are you taking here?
I'm taking USC.
Okay. Let's jump now to one of the biggest games on Saturday, in my opinion. That's 12 o'clock. L.A. Monroe at Florida State. Florida State's a 27-point favorite. Can your Warhawks do it, Dan?
I don't think Florida State covers that. With all this rumors surrounding Jimbo Fisher leaving and – you know, the fact that this is a game that, like, nobody wants to play, that basically the athletic department is forcing them to play so that they can keep this phony baloney bowl streak going. I mean, Florida State's going to win, but this is going to be one of those, like, flim-fart, fuck-around games where everybody plays like
this
shit.
This will be the game, like, you'll wake up and you'll see the bottom line and you'll be kind of confused when you see the score. I think, is this the MAC championship here? I'm talking Akron at Toledo. Zips at Rockets. We haven't talked a lot of MAC this year, Dan, for a good reason. Toledo's a 21.5-point favorite. I know nothing about this. I'm just going to take Toledo because I like the points.
Toledo will probably do this, but my heart makes me pick Akron. You know why? You know who Akron's coach is?
Who is that?
The best coach in Auburn history, Terry Bowden.
That's right. I forgot Terry Bowden was alive.
Fat Terry
now
Bowden.
Now I'm going to take Akron. I'm jumping with you. I'm taking Akron. Akron catching 21.5. Give me that.
And you know,
let's jump now.
You know,
let's
who,
jump to
you
the
know
American.
Who Akron? Do you know who Akron's basketball or defensive coach is?
Who?
The greatest coach in NC State history, Chuck Amato. The chess.
This is kind of the power hour team. We should have been watching Akron all year. Two of our boys.
the greatest coaches in our alma mater.
This is our child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, made
this
one.
This is our child team right here.
So, go Akron.
Beat the Zips.
Yeah. Go Akron. Beat Toledo.
That'll be at 12 o'clock.
If you ever wanted to know what would happen if me and Mitch were football coaches and we coached on the same team, it would be Akron.
Let's talk now the person going for the championship of all of America, Dan. Memphis at Central Florida. Memphis is catching 7. I'm liking it. I think Central Florida loses this game. I think the noise about Scott Frost is going to get louder. Memphis is going to steal this one somehow. I don't know why I'm picking it, but I am, Dan.
I agree. I agree. I think Central Florida is a great team. We just sucked their dick for about 10 minutes. But, yeah, this has all the feeling of, oh, shit, our coach is leaving. Ah, shit.
Yeah. Even though Memphis' coach apparently isn't leaving. So we'll...
And Memphis is really, really good. And Memphis is making a strong play to keep Norvell. You know, Memphis is looking like they might pay a coach $3 million, which is unheard of for the University of Memphis. Those kids over there are like, hey, we might keep our coach. Whereas, like, Central Florida, it's, like, pretty much, like, Scott Frost is already, like, picking out his red polos. Like, he's already looking for houses in Lincoln, you know. Like, yeah, it's over for him at Central Florida.
This is the championship game, right? North Texas at Florida Atlantic?
Yep, that's the Conference USA championship game.
Conference USA, that's what I was thinking. Our boy, Lane Kiffin, his Owls are favored by 11. Taking Lane, I didn't even know he was doing good down there until I watched him play fine bomb this week.
Yeah, they're like the number 9 running team in the country. Yeah. Like they've put up crazy stats running the football this year.
I'm just, knowing nothing about it, I'm taking him.
Florida Atlantic has such a crazy huge talent advantage because of they basically just loaded up on every single talented JUCO who has major discipline issues. That can't get into a real school. Like, he just loaded up on it. He's basically like running Last Chance U, the school. So,
smart move by Kiffin, though. I like that.
So, like, just,
did you see his troll? Did you see him troll Tennessee today?
Yes.
On Twitter?
He's got a great Twitter game.
Big fan of troll Kiffin. Yeah. I'm starting to like Lane Kiffin again, I think. I don't know why. Let's talk Big 12 championship. We're talking the Horny Frogs going to play the Sooners. Sooners are our favorite by a touchdown, Dan. We talked about this earlier this year. Give me TCU to win this one outright and create playoff chaos.
Always bet on the Big 12 to cause chaos. They have done it more than anybody else. And plus, the Big 12 has this coming karmically because this game should not exist. There's no reason for it to exist. Oklahoma won a round-robin conference schedule. If they did not play this game, they would already be in the they would already be in the playoff. So of course the NCAA or the Big 12 outsmarting themselves and putting in a meaningless 13th game is going to cost them a playoff spot. Bet the farm on TCU.
All right, Dan, I want to talk about an emotional game here. Idaho travels to Georgia State. It's the last game Idaho ever plays, and what do we call it now?
FBS football.
FBS history, Idaho's a 6-point underdog. Idaho's going to win the game. They're going to beat Georgia State in their last game in FBS history.
Idaho's going to win the football game!
I like Idaho here, though. And here's something I also learned this week. I guess the Sun Belt doesn't play a conference championship game.
They don't have enough teams. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They only have like 10 teams.
The Cherokee Casino?
Yeah. They are thinking about adding more teams.
Why is there no Cherokee Casino Bowl?
Have you been to Cherokee, North Carolina?
I just got invited, and I gave my friend a soft no. I don't want to go gamble.
Okay. No place more depressing than a Cherokee casino because they don't even have, like, table games. It's just
you
slots.
Can't even smoke in there, right?
You could when I used to go to Cherokee.
I think you can play craps.
I don't think they have it.
I know they don't give you free booze, so I'm like, what's the point?
No. I mean, it's basically
like,
just
that's like
slots.
The gift with the casino.
It's basically, like, I don't know what the big difference is between it and, like, one of those, like, weird things that's on the side of the street that'll be, like, arcade.
Is it like the casino from Vegas Vacation?
Well, you know.
Cousin Eddie brought Chevy Chase to.
No, those are,
like,
no.
Guess a number.
It's like, have you ever been to one of those, have you ever seen those on the side of the street in, like, the middle of nowhere, and it'll say, like, arcade games of skill, and it's just like a it looks like a gas station that got knocked down and they took the gas pumps out because the guy couldn't afford to buy more gas anymore for his like independent gas station, so he just turned it into an illicit casino. That's Cherokee casinos.
We don't have a lot of that here in Georgia. Actually, though, we have the slots in like certain gas stations in unquestionable areas, but you can't win cash. You just win like store credit or something. It's really dumb.
We have a lot of those illicit gambling facilities in Indian Territory where I live. The Indians just like it. That's all I know.
Yeah, we didn't give the Aborigine people anything. Whatever we're supposed to call them now. Indigenous people. We did not give them anything, Dan, and we're proud of it here in Georgia. Let's jump down to the Mountain West Conference Championship game. I'm talking Fresno State at Boise State. These two teams played last week, I believe. Fresno State's 9-point underdog. I'm taking Fresno's in here, catching them points. Know nothing about it.
Yeah, this is all I can tell you, is that I'm so damn happy for Fresno State and Jeff Tedford, because everybody was calling that like the worst hire of the offseason, and that, oh my God, you dug up this dinosaur, Jeff Tedford. What's wrong with you, Fresno State? Don't you know Jeff Tedford was like completely washed up? Are you guys crazy? And I'll be damned if he didn't immediately turn Fresno State around.
There you go. Let's talk now. Let's talk ACC championship really quick. We're talking Miami going to Clemson. What did they even play the game now? Like in they also play this winning Cherokee.
I think it's in Jacksonville.
So in front of like two people in Jacksonville, Florida. It might draw with the Hurricanes. We'll see. Clemson's.
No, you know how far away how far away Miami is from Jacksonville.
That's true. Miami's like at the very end. That's right. But you can fly.
I'm pretty sure Clemson is closer.
Well, there you go. I'm taking Miami catching 9.5. They played bad last week. I don't think they're going to play bad 2 weeks in a row. I'm not saying they beat Clemson. I think it's a close game.
It's in Charlotte. It's back in Charlotte.
Oh.
Because HB2 got revealed. Okay.
We're home of the Belk Bowl, baby.
So it's going to be.
I want to talk about this. You see the Belk Bowl trolled Alabama on Twitter?
No. Belk Bowl Twitter is the best Twitter account, though.
Yeah, they tweeted at Alabama. They go, "Well, you're still Belk Bowl eligible." They were none too pleased about that.
I remember somebody on Twitter was like, "Texas A&M in the Belk Bowl. Who says no?" And the Belk Bowl goes, "The ACC, because they have an automatic deal with us."
Who do we like in this game? Do you think Clemson's going to win by 9.5?
Clemson's going to win by 30. Like, this Miami team has been, like, a nice story, but a pretender all season long. And Pitt exposed the fact that they're really not good enough to be in this discussion. And Clemson's going to just pile drive them.
All right, let's talk about the Big Ten Championship, the BIG, B1G, if you will. Talking Ohio State, playing Wisconsin in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana.
Back home again in Indiana. That's what they sing in Indiana.
Ohio State's a 6.5-point favorite. And I think they blow out the Badgers. I think they win by like 21. Wisconsin hasn't played a good team all year. Best team they played was Michigan, who was starting, you know, John, Freak on the Leash, O'Corn. I think Ohio State's going to blow them the fuck out.
I think Wisconsin's going to win.
Like, with an emphasis on fuck.
I think, okay, here's...
Why is that?
Because, actual Michigan almost beat Ohio State, and Wisconsin is like what if this year's Michigan team had a quarterback who wasn't completely terrible? Well, if Michigan had a quarterback who wasn't completely terrible, they'd have beat Ohio State. So that's why I'm picking. That's why I'm picking Wisconsin.
I think the talent's gonna be really different, and that's it. There's no other games to talk about, right? No one else is playing at 4 o'clock on CBS in Atlanta.
So here's what I'm going to say about the game that's not actually happening.
Okay, well, let's talk about it. In the beautiful Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Dan, Georgia at Auburn. Auburn's a 2.5-point favorite.
Are they going to open the robot butthole for this?
I don't think it's going to rain this, but it'll be cold. You'll probably close it. It's too cold. It's like down to 50 degrees here, Dan. It's very cold.
When are we going to see that robot butthole?
It opened up for the Falcons.
I want that.
They're like week four.
I want that open robot butthole. That's all I want.
What do you think? I'm going to abstain from any thoughts. I'll throw in some thoughts, but I'm not picking. Who are you picking here?
Auburn's going to beat them by 2 scores minimum.
Don't say that.
Yeah, they're going to beat them by 2 scores. They are going to leave Georgia. Like, every single... That stadium is going to be full of Atlanta fans, of Atlanta-based Georgia fans, who are going to be wearing golf shorts. They're going to be wearing golf shorts and golf shirts. Mm-hmm. And the women are going to be wearing those golf skorts. Those like, skorts with shorts under them. The skirts with shorts under them that golf girls wear. And then they're going to watch Georgia's going to be out of this game by halftime, and they're all just going to watch the second half with their arms folded, making that Georgia fan face. You know the one.
Yes, because I grew up around them in the club level. And they'll be cursing, and you'll hear a lot of the N-word for some reason, even though I don't think there's, like, a black person on Georgia's coaching staff. our quarterback. I'm interested to see kind of how Georgia does things different this week, this time around, Dan. Like, I don't know if you noticed in the Auburn-Alabama game, Gus came out and he threw a lot of screens, really, like, quick screens to the sideline to kind of open up the Alabama defense. Do you think Georgia will do something similar? Because I would. I would come out and kind of get from rolling with some screens really quick and let Auburn know, hey, you can't blitz us every down, especially in first and second.
I mean, I haven't seen that much creativity from Georgia all year, so nah. They're probably
That was my thinking.
They're probably just going to sit there and go, all right, didn't work the first time, but let's just run the ball down their throat over and over again. Maybe it'll work this time.
We're just going to be tougher. Yeah.
What I'm saying is,
I think this year's
Georgia team is like Will Muschamp's second year at Florida, where they won like 11 games, and people are like, hey, Will Muschamp, it's working. And then it never worked again because they stunk.
So where you take advantage of someone else, like a much better coaches, good players?
Yep.
What if Mark Richt was coaching this Georgia team? Do you think they'd have a better chance?
Yeah, because I think Mark Richt would come into this game with a pretty good game plan on how to not get beat twice. And
I got into a lot of arguments this weekend with Georgia fans who fuck Mark Richt. I go, you guys remember where you were before Mark Richt? Remember playing in the Hawaii Bowl every Christmas Eve?
If that.
With Jimmy Dunn? With future Tennessee coach Jim Donnan?
Do you remember?
We thought out if he was dead, Dan.
Do you remember when like Florida broke the record for most points scored at Sanford Stadium? Do you remember that?
Not even by an opponent, just period.
Yeah, they scored more points than anybody has ever scored at Sanford Stadium.
Yeah, you remember when you hyped up Eric Zier as the best quarterback in Georgia history because he was.
Jim Donnan is alive.
Here you go. Jim Donnan will be your next Tennessee coach.
He was inducted into the College Hall of Fame.
Wasn't he involved in like a Madoff scam or something?
Yeah, there was
think of Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, there was one of those coaches roped a bunch of other coaches.
But he led it. Yeah.
Was he?
I don't know if he led it, but I know he was up there with it. I thought he got jail time.
I don't think so. That's not on his
wiki. Remember he was on ESPN.
I feel like if he was, you know where he's working now.
Where?
He is an analyst for the American Sports Network, which I have never heard of.
Ooh.
Oh, that is Sinclair. Sinclair Broadcasting.
That is owned by our boys at Sinclair.
Yeah, okay. Owners.
We're gunning for the Sinclair gig. We want Sinclair to pick up this podcast by Half Guarded. And we're ready to sell out for conservatism, baby. We're going to own some libs.
Oh, I have this station. I have this. There's,
yeah,
we have a station.
What are they show like Liberty? They show like Liberty football.
Well, like, and they also like they'll show like.
No, Dan. I think don't they exclusively show like historically black colleges on that station?
Well, I get a lot of like Big South conference because like Presbyterian is in the Big South, and I'm right here on the South Carolina border. So like I get like all of these weird like second tier like the Citadel. I get all of the Citadel's games on this thing. It's really really weird. Yeah, I see every.
Well, people
Citadel
forget
game.
This. You know, the Citadel fires a cannon every time they score.
I guess Jim Donnan.
Have you ever been to a Citadel game?
No,
Dan?
I have not. I've not had. The
I
want
to talk Citadel football first. I went. One of my buddies got recruited to go play there, and I was remember every time they scored, they fired a cannon. The cannon's like right next to the tennis courts, so every time they would play, they'd be like girls out there playing tennis, and they would get scared to shit every time Citadel would score a touchdown.
You'd think, by at some point they'd figure it out, right? But I guess not.
Yeah. Well, Citadel, I will say, if you're a recruit looking at Citadel, don't go there, but they have a nice spread. You get a lot of good food there.
Mm.
And Charleston's a pretty cool town. So.
Well, I get, Jim Donnan, famously was the offensive coordinator for Barry Switzer running the wishbone, and then went to Marshall, mm-hmm. and he recruited some guy named Randy Moss to Marshall. I'm not sure why this guy's in the College Football Hall of Fame. I'm a little bit confused.
Well, he won several Aloha Bowls. Have you seen his Aloha Bowl record, Dan? He's great.
Yeah, he went to the Oahu Bowl, as it was called back then.
Yeah. All right, so before we get out of here, you got anything else? I got a fuck you of the week, but I'll let you go first.
Well, I think we all know my fuck you of the week. So since I spent, like, 20 minutes ranting about the national media, I will, instead of doing a fuck you of the week, I'm going to go a bless you of the week to myself, because it's my birthday tomorrow.
Oh, happy birthday.
High five me.
Happy early birthday. Here
you go. Self-high five.
Happy 48th birthday, Dan.
Yeah, I'm 75
Congrats
years old.
Congrats on being another year. Yeah. Another year closer to death.
Yep.
My fuck you of the week, it is to carpetbagging racist Yankees move down to Atlanta and want to talk about shit at the bar next to me and be really racist and conservative. Get the fuck out of Atlanta and go back to Ohio. We don't accept racism here. Get out of here. Don't move to the South because you think it's cool and you can get away with being a racist, because I'll bite your head off. And I almost did that. I had to leave the bar. I was getting so mad at these people.
Yeah, don't move into a southern city, at least. If you want to be a racist in the South, you got to move out to the burbs, Bubba.
Yeah. Well, I do kind of live in the burbs. But don't even move to the South. Just say and be racist in Ohio. We don't need anyone else like you. That's not what the South's about. That ain't what the hospitality and all that fun stuff is about. So
don't
if you're
pay
a racist carpetbagging
Mountain.
Yankee, yeah, don't that doesn't count. those guys are heroes, Dan. That was about states' rights. I don't know what you're talking about. I guess you didn't pay attention in history class. But yeah, don't move down here though. If you're a racist Yankee, stay up there. I don't like racists. B, if you're a Yankee, I hate you more. And don't take jobs away from Southerners. Fuck off. Let us have those jobs. We deserve them more. That's my fuck you of the week.
Oh, well. On that note, with the law laid down, all I can do is say, play the music, Jason.
Oh, also, before we play the music, Jason, we'll be back next week with our Bowl Extravaganza Part 1, baby. Get hyped. This is me and Dan's favorite episode every year, I think.